Welcome to The Ether. Today is Thursday, June 9th, 2022. Today on The Ether, value chains to unlock the potential of ReFi, hosted by the ReGen Foundation. Let's take a listen.
Good morning, good afternoon, good folks. Hi, Jory. Hi, Thiago. Awesome. We have Heiss here. Heiss, welcome to the space. Thank you so much. We also have Gabriela up here. Hi, Gabriela. Welcome to the space.
Thank you.
Hey, everyone.
Hello, everyone. Happy to be here.
Yeah.
So we have Heiss. You are also the co-host. That's just for the safe side in case things drop or something. Thiago and Jory are speakers as well as Gabriela. Absolutely. We are good here. I suggest we shall just wait one more minute and then we shall kick off things. Thank you.
Nice to meet you, everyone. Do you hear me well? I'm Khurid.
Yeah. Sounds good.
Yes. Perfect. Great. Thank you so much, everybody, for taking this time to join in this space. I'm just going to be sharing the flow of the event, and then we shall get to it. Heiss will be leading the space. I will be supporting in terms of any invites or anybody has any questions, etc. We have with us Gabriela and Jory. From Ethic Hub, we have Thiago from the Common Stack, and I believe Josh should also be joining us soon. I now hand over to Heiss to take this forward.
Okay, great. Thank you. I guess what we named this space Value Chains, and it's in the context of the ReGen Foundation and the work that we're doing with blockchain-based payments for ecosystem services. I'll just explain what my role is in this whole ecosystem. So I work with the foundation on mainly reaching out to non-commercial, non-Web3 savvy stakeholders, like smallholder farmer cooperatives and indigenous communities doing conservation work. And my background has also been in that. So I've been working for the last 20 years in India. I live in India with smallholder farmers in mainly in cotton, but also other crops. Organic agriculture, fair trade is kind of the lens from which I look at a lot of these new developments. And what I'm really excited to delve more deeply into with Ethic Hub and with you, Thiago, is where do we see the potential? And if we get into the nitty-gritty of working with existing value chains where already many things have been tried, over the last few decades, the organic movement is already, I don't know how many years old, 40 years or something. The fair trade movement is, it has a lot of experience. So where do we position this new Web3 version of things? What do we think that it can uniquely make possible that was not possible before? How do we see that it latches on to these previous experiences? Maybe also good to look at some critical reflections. Sometimes when we get new toys in our hands, we get so excited and we think that we can use them for everything. So maybe to also put some boundaries on where we think that they have limitations. How does that sound as a chunk of content.
Absolutely amazing, Heis. And I'm sorry, I'm just going to interrupt you for a minute. I would love also for the speakers, Thiago, Jory, Gabriela, and Josh in that order, and that's just the order in which they arrive, to take a minute each and just introduce themselves before we get into the actual questions. I hope that's okay, Heis.
Absolutely. Please go for it.
Great. Thiago, could you please? Yeah, thank you.
Sure. Thank you. Is my mic better now?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay, great. So I'm from Brazil. I've been working with organic agriculture and the CSA movement for about 6 or 7 years now. I am an agronomist, but I also am tech savvy, so to speak, and also work with some big data and data-driven decisions. But, and yeah, I think that's the main picture for me right now. I've been working with also with a foundation here in Brazil to improve the social impact they have on coffee growers. So yeah, and I've been around the crypto space for since 2018 and trying to study cases of the blockchain applied to sustainability and organic farming and how we can improve that this value chain to sort of leave more space for the farmers and land stewards. Thank you all for this space today. And yeah, let's see what's coming. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for that, Thiago. Yeah.
Go for it, Heis. Go for it.
No. You had a clear sequence of people you wanted people to.
Absolutely, I do. Absolutely. Yeah. Thanks so much for that, Jory. I invite you now to take the stage and just share. Take a minute to share about the work that you do. Thank you so much.
Yeah. So hello. Thank you for inviting. This is Jory from Ethic Hub. Previous to Ethic Hub, I was born in the coffee sector because my mother have a coffee farm in Mexico. I am half Spanish, half Mexican. I have been the CEO of a wholesaler in Spain afterwards with over 800 employees. And in 2016, I did an innovation degree about where I met blockchain technology. And I said, okay, this will change everything. And I want to work with this to make sure this change it not only happens, but it really impacts the world in a good way, no? Because at the end, technology is just a tool that can be used for good or for bad. And so I started thinking like, okay, I have this superpower that is I've been half Mexican, half Spanish, knowing the value chain of coffee. Knowing these smallholder farmers who are most of the excluded from the traditional financial system that will be disrupted by this new technology. So this is the opportunity to solve one of these, maybe the biggest problem with the traditional financial system, that is that it left excluded this almost a quarter of the world population, which most of them are smallholder farmers in developing economies. And this is how Ethic Hub basically started.
Hello. Thank you for inviting us as Ethic Hub. I'm Gabriela Chang, co-founder of this amazing project. And well, my background is mixed and wide. I'm an industrial designer and artist and writer. And I work for 5 years at the Secretary of Economic Development in Mexico, in Chiapas. And I was also an organic coffee producer. So I'm quite aware of the problems on field of this sector. And since I get in contact with blockchain in 2017, I saw the amazing possibilities of solving the exclusion of a quarter of the world population, especially because most of them are small farmers. And because agriculture, I think it's the key factor to solve not just climate change, but also the huge inequalities and the huge problems that are derived from this. So I'm very happy to be here and to share the perspective from the small farmers and all the problems that come from having so little land, but that put together represents a vast amount of the land in the world. In the case of coffee, which is my specialty, in the case of coffee, 80% of the total production is in the hands of these people that is excluded not just from the financial system, but also for the traditional certification system. So I'm very happy to see the new race of a possibility for solve this exclusion for once and forever. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for that, Gabriela. We also have Josh here. Josh, would you like to take a minute to just introduce yourself? Thank you.
Hello. Yeah, I'm the rhizome that ran around the Telegram channels and connected a number of the panelists while Heist was on holiday. So I'm just here coasting, really. But I'm glad to have connected some people and pointed things in a direction. Hopefully we'll see some good stuff coming out of this discussion. Cheers.
Thanks, Josh. Heist, I invite you now to take this forward. Thank you.
Super. Yeah, thanks so much. That sounds really exciting. I'm very keen to learn more about the model of Ethic Hub. And what I understand that one aspect you're tackling is access to finance. And I'm just wondering what... And then Gabriela mentioned also, you know, this kind of exclusion from other certification schemes like, you know, organic and rainforest and fair trade and so forth. So I'm wondering if you can explain a little bit about that second aspect of, you know, the because this is where I see there's a good synergy or overlap with the whole regen model. No? the regen model is specifically targeted at rewarding land stewards for regenerative practices. So can you say a bit more about that side of your Ethic Hub model?
Yes, thank you. We are addressing the exclusion. According to the World Bank, a quarter of the world population is excluded from the financial system, and most of them, 1.2 billion, are small farmers that are living in poverty despite having productive activities. So we started with coffee because it's the industry we know very well to start proving this problem can be solved using more inclusive economic systems as blockchain. Because the poorest the country, the more expensive the fees, the bank fees are for transference of money. So we develop a platform that makes possible to connect complementary economic regions. So people in Europe, for example, who gets very small, very little return for their savings, can directly invest into these stewards that are not only producing coffee, but are also taking care of the trees and the huge biodiversity that grows in this sector. So we want to reach also the certifications, because we issued our own certificate of good practices, agricultural, economical, social, and environmental, because they are also excluded for the same reason. They're too small to handle all the logistics, all the paperwork, all the organizative work that needs to be done. And most of the system is designed to work upon huge areas of land. And these small farmers, most of them in average has 1 or 1.5 hectare of land. So it's a lot if you put them all together. But so far, as I was saying, the system is not focused on working with these tiny, tiny volumes. And we believe that technology, but all technology put together, AI, drones, everything, would make possible to do a supervision, to do a measurement of the goods they are adding to the ecosystem, the ecological services they are providing. And we can make it possible to measure them and to reward them specifically without intermediaries and without them being required to comply with all the difficult requirements that the traditional system has. So this is like, I don't know if with this I answer your question, Jis.
I hear that it's your intention to do that. So my question is, like, is that also part of the model that is working already? Like, I understand the direct financing from consumers to growers. So there are people in Europe that you know, nothing happens if they put their money on the bank. So they'll be happy to kind of pre-finance the growers. I've understood. The other bit about the different types of ecosystem services, can you say a bit more about how your model is making that is using blockchain to make those claims how do you say like obvious or make them visible? Because you can have many different. You can do good things for your soil or for the animals living around you or for your river, or, you know, there can be like, mm-hmm. especially in a decentralized system, there can be 20,000 things that you can be doing. So I'm wondering what your approach is about that and how it's different from conventional certification.
Okay, first, we started by providing them affordable working capital that allows them to break the poverty cycle. Because they are conditioned to the little money they can get, it's that expensive that they are not able to pay it back without losing most of the benefits. So, and it's conditioned to the sale of the crops. So we started by providing a financial solution, then providing a commercial solution to trade their coffee without intermediaries. And then we scale it by providing a crowd collateral based on DeFi. So more people is willing to lend the farmers and increase the volume of people supported through this lending. And after that, we are working now on getting them additional benefits, additional economic benefits for all the services they are providing. So this is like step-by-step system, because the problem is so huge that we need to start healing layer by layer. And we start with the basic one that was the financial. And from there, we are keeping very sturdy steps toward the next one. So right now we are in contact. Okay, this has been working for 3 years. The compensation system to protect the loans is working for 1 year. After all this time, we keep less than 1% default. And so now it's time for the next step, which is providing them economical benefits for all the works they are doing as the stewards, as guardian of these trees. So we are already in contact with other protocols that were working on carbon credit sequestration. And now we want to make this possible for these tiny units for getting these benefits also for them. And we think it's feasible, because we have already built the base to do so and to keep working forward it.
Okay. All right. Thanks. So you're starting with carbon and using existing protocols. Tiago, how about you? You mentioned something. I have no idea what is your field situation in Brazil, and how are you using this technology to reward regenerative stewardship?
Yeah. I mean, the main purpose here is basically to, because when we go buy something, go to the supermarket or whatever, we always are with the consumer in the center of the relationship. You know? So when we think about this relationship with farmers, coffee growers, or land stewards, they always have a sort of secondary role on the chain, but we try to reduce that inequality in the system by bringing more attention and bringing more awareness about their role, which means for us that we are trying to turn these relationships in a more horizontal way. That's one of the things I think is most fascinating about the technology, is to bring this awareness, because no one has to be in the center of top-down infrastructure to get benefits from from its activities. So, yeah, and trying to understand and experimenting about the eco-credits other than carbon credits that are well known right now, but we are trying to develop more understanding and more peer-to-peer, or how we call it, campesino ideal of connection with the environment and the resources they use. So yeah, that's basically what we are trying to do right now here. Also with the Commons Tech, we are trying to reduce the gap between the land stewards and the farmers for how to do we like use like Elinor Ostrom 8 principles. You know, it's not perfect, but how do we understand their design principles and how do we apply that with our technologies and our governance models or governance technologies to and see what are the similarities, what are the intersections, and how we can learn more than use the technology for the land stewards, and how and if there are any relevant technology for this kind of relationship, like co-ops or associations.
Okay, and so this is in it's like an exploratory phase. You're doing your like preparatory research, or do you already have experience of this working in real life, like applied that producers or stewards actually got rewarded for their regenerative practices?
Yeah, it's still an exploratory and also like a research. Yeah, I have an association here in Brazil. I'm trying to bring in this idea to prototype and see how we can understand how they are dealing with the resources and how we can reward them right now. Mm-hmm.
Okay. I understand. The theme being value chains. One question that comes up to me, you know, when we're talking about this decentralized technology, you can connect growers, you know, who are doing good regenerative practices with basically anybody in the world. You know, they might be a consumer of an end product of the grower, or they could be just random citizens who appreciate, regenerative land stewardship, or people who are, you know, looking to offset their carbon emissions in some way. So, and this is a question for either of you. Like, how do you see how important do you think it is to have this relationship with a consumer who also has, you know, who's also like drinking your coffee, or, you know, eating your chocolate, or like wearing your cotton, as opposed to basically the world at large? You know, does this value chain relationship actually add any value to grower groups when they're crowdsourcing support for their regenerative practices?
I think that the key point is that end consumers understand the superpower they have with their money, no? So how they invest and how they consume their preference to one product over the other or if they want to offset their emissions or their plastic or a footprint or whatever. This is the key that the society is willing to take this step forward, because because we all raise awareness about the problems we are facing and about the superpower everyone has, no, to change everything. And this is what we are doing in Ethic Hub. It's a peer-to-peer lending. So you can lend to the farmers, or you can buy their coffee, and in the future you can buy their carbon credits. No, it's a new source of revenue for the farmers, which at the end is our end goal too. Our mission is to help them.
Yeah, no, I understand that there is definitely potential synergy. Like if I am already drinking somebody's coffee, I'm more likely to also, you know, invest in pre-financing, and I'm more likely to, if I'm offsetting my carbon, you know, more likely to do it with people from with whom I already have a relationship. I guess this is one of my main assumptions about the importance of using value chains. Because there are existing relationships, I just wanted to, you know, critically reflect on that. Because, you know, through the internet, everybody is connected to everybody else. So I'm wondering, you know, how important is that consumer role? You know, because as say somebody in the West with very little returns on their bank, I don't have to be a coffee drinker to invest in coffee farmers, or I don't have to be a coffee drinker to invest in like offsetting amongst coffee co-op, you know, offsetting my carbon there. So just wondering about, because it's also a question, you know, for us in region, whether we want to prioritize working with existing value chains, because there are already these relationships between consumers and producers, or not, you know, and then basically looking at the world at large, the general public, and selling these micro eco credits to everybody. So that's where that question came from.
So I would say that it is needed, because if we separate, as we did, no, in this new societies, that you are not in contact with the guy who produced your shoes anymore. No? So at the end, you are losing also the understanding that he has to make a life out of making that shoes, so we can live all together in a more fair and sustainable society. And it's not only that, but in the case of smallholder farmers, is mandatory that you work with the value chain, because if you only want to do lending to smallholder farmers without the leveraging on actual value chain stakeholders, you just cannot reach them in an affordable way. It will be super expensive to give loans to these farmers if you are not having any other business when working with them. Our vision is that you have to have a solution that it is holistic approach that works with the farmers in many ways, so you can reach them.
Got it. Thank you. That sounds really interesting. So basically, what you're saying is, even if this whole technology is, you know, very decentralized and it can, you know, ideally reach people at very small scales, there's still a need for aggregation, and there's still a need for these collectives in order to reach the last mile, like reach the smallholder, and most likely you're going to find those through access through value chains. So actually, this brings me to another question. What has been your experience in terms of the whole digital divide? You know, it's a major headache for us that we are excited about this new fancy technology, but then we're talking like crypto jargon with smallholders. So how has been your experience with that? Like this bridging between these two worlds of Web3 and smallholder farmers?
I would like to say that we have proved that it is possible to benefit the small farmers, even if they don't interact with the technology at this stage. At the beginning, we tried and it was very complicated. So in order to make it scalable, we rely on what Jorge was saying, on existing structures that were the supply chain that were already in contact with them. So what we did is using one of the links of the supply chain that has a sustainable relationship with the farmers to get the money to them. It can be someone that provides, that adds value to the chain, as a fertilizer, organic fertilizer vendor, or technical service support, or different ways, even NGOs that were in contact with them, but they are not able to provide working capital. So we rely on existing structures to make it sustainable, and as we say, regenerative, like to give more than we extract to them and to reach them. So, but technology is growing very fast. It's improving very fast. So we expect in a few months, in a year or two, to be able to reach the last beneficiary, to give them cards so they can receive directly the funds and expand them, no? In a swapping system or something, like kind of a Visa card. So they would be able to use the money directly, and we would be able to provide the traceability until the last point. But for now, it's been efficiency enough to use the existing links within this sustainable supply chain, where we eliminated the intermediaries that didn't add value to it, as microfinancial institutions in the case of the small farmers, the last mile farmers.
Thank you. So basically what I understand is that you're using existing value chains to identify somebody in that chain who can act as an intermediary, who can bridge with the smallholder, so that the smallholder doesn't need to understand all the tech themselves.
More than intermediaries, we like to talk about partners, like the link in the supply chain that is trading their coffee to sell it in Europe. It's a partner with the farmer, because the farmer will benefit from the final price of it. It is all linked. So in this new supply chain, the farmers are no longer the weakest link. And in the future, as I was saying, they will interact with the technology. Right now, what we are telling them is where the money comes from. They don't have Wi-Fi. They don't have connectivity. So few of them have mobile phones, but most of them have heard about internet, of course. So we tell them the money comes through internet from people as hard workers and honest as them that have their savings in the bank, but they don't get a benefit from having there. So we convince them to trust the farmers and lend them their money. So we create like a personal connection between people helping people. That's why our slogan says connecting people, harvesting wealth.
Interesting. Thanks. I just saw this notification that somebody wanted to speak, but I don't really understand this technology. So does somebody want to speak?
So I did not invite the gentleman on stage because we hadn't really opened up for question. Should we go ahead and invite people to put up their hands to come up on stage and share?
Yeah, sure. Cool. Sorry, I didn't
usually for the first 30 minutes, you know, we want to ensure that we have the conversation, and that as a general rule, I do that. But your point is taken. I invite people to just raise their hands, and I'm happy to invite them to the stage to share their thoughts and points about this very important topic. I also see that we have, we have Revati, we have Schwartz from yesterday. We have Econavi also from yesterday. Feel free to just raise your hands, and I'm happy to invite you.
Yeah, cool. Maybe Tiago, you can, while we're waiting for someone to raise their hand, you can say something about, you mentioned this peer-to-peer, campesino to campesino, involvement in governance. So on this topic of crypto being abstract and inaccessible, what has been your first response if you're introducing this this technology to grassroots community based organizations? How do people react? Do they think that it's like too abstract, or can they relate to it? What has been your experience?
Yeah, I honestly try to bring to the ground when I talk about business communities, trying to use examples of former our history of trading and how we used to trade goods in the past, and try to explain that now we can do the same, create microeconomies and expand their value chains with these microeconomies where everybody can benefit. Like, in the past, we traded like coffee with salt and or rocks and shells, but right now we can do that in a more sustainable way and more transparent way without letting like people who just want to retrieve value from the chain. And we can use that to empower this community. So I try to explain this perspective of how we can create these microeconomies within their local communities, and also open the microeconomies for, like, very much like Gabriela told us about their role with Ethic Hub, to like, where does this money come from? This money come from partners who want to like bring more value to the chain, not just retrieve value. And so, yeah, that's my basic approach.
And so, what's been the response? Has it worked or?
Yeah, sometimes it works. Sometimes it's like it raises more questions, actually. But it's, in general, it has been well accepted. It's not easy to like, can we really get value from that? Can we really be empowered? But I think it's like long-term perspective, long-term goal to like start small and like show them how it can be working, how it can be of value for them more than just about the money. But okay. They are
awesome.
Generally very open. Yeah.
Awesome. Hi, we have somebody who raised the hand, Ghislaine. Can we invite her to the?
Super. Yeah.
Yeah, Ghislaine, please go for it. Hi, Ghislaine, you have speaker rights. Please go for it. Please unmute yourself. Some tech issue probably. Hi. Yeah. Sorry for that. Please continue.
Okay. yeah, I don't know how to unmute other people, if that is at all even possible. No, I don't think so. All right. So, yeah. What I'm interested in is these two different how would you say that, like, parallel types of impact. On the one hand, we've got economic impact, like smallholders can get new revenue sources. And on the other hand, we have impact on governance. What Tiago was saying is that there's a more horizontal governance that is possible. From Ethic Hub, what has been your experience since you intervened in these existing value chains? Have you seen any shift in power? Have you seen existing relationships change because of this new connection that you were enabling for growers to get other sources of funding, or value chain actors to take up different roles than they were taking before?
Yes, indeed. We are very happy to see increase the relation between the farmers to work as a community to get a benefit from them. And I would like to point out that the biggest benefit of Ethic Hub is not the economical, even when it may be like the landing point, but it's the environmental, because all these stewards, all these tiny farmers work with regenerative approach. And when they are not able to leave from their coffee lands, they cut down the trees and they plant corn and they get a living out of it for 1 or 2 years, and then they migrate to the United States in the case of Latin America. So I think the main impact is that now they are aware of the importance of not just of the coffee they produce, but of the way they produce it. Because the buyers we are getting, it's people interested into this this way of cropping, this way of agriculture. And that's very important for them. And also, we have created the right incentives to promote these good practices, because it reflects also in the quality of the cup, of the coffee. And they've seen how when they have better practices, it reflects on the points in the cup, and how small farmers that have higher grade cups get a higher economical benefit that is directly linked to the quality of their practices. So I think it's a very interesting way of interlinking it and rewarding these practices that for them has been ancestral, but nobody has until now recognized the value of it. So our certificate accounts for their good practices in a way. So people that is interested in buying their coffee at the end is also interested in preserving the huge biodiversity that is sheltered by this way of shade grown coffee, of this way of agroforestry crops.
Interesting. And can you say a little bit more about these relationships? Like, how did you see the relationships change in the existing value chains?
Well, for now, they start working as community, collaborating as a small community from the farmers that were together, starting by 20 people. Some of there are 35 people. So it's easier for them to organize regarding hiring the small trucks to move their coffee, for example. But in the other end of the supply chain, we have these buyers, these roasters, that were so interested in visiting the place and knowing our farmers. And we have signed alliance with these traders who are now providing technological assistance to make the quality of the cup improve. So they traveled to these tiny areas and they were not aware of the many challenges that such small farmers have. I mean, they have to walk 2 hours to reach to their tiny villages. And now, I think a strong relation has been established between these links in the supply chain. And they are willing to pay more for the coffee because they know the work it is to take it out. That is, you cannot compare it with commercial coffee. So you are adding value to the knowledge that each of the links has of from each other. So especially in that way. So this allows for this intermediation for a future, for a buy of the crops in advance. So this gives more assurance to the farmers that all the efforts they are putting into taking care of the environment, because it means taking care of their coffee, it's highly evaluated, it's highly appreciated on the other side of the supply chain. So we are now building an environment and an ecosystem where all the links are meant to interact, to generate value for all of them, to generate share value in a true sense, and visiting these communities. And we hope in the future some of these farmers can come and visit the places where their coffee is sold. But I think in this stage, it's more important to set the relevance of the ways of production, of these sustainable, regenerative ways of taking care of the trees, of the land, of all the production in itself.
So if I understand correctly, in your experience, even just the fact that, that small producers were made visible because they entered on your platform, that changed something in the relationships where maybe they became less anonymous and new traders started paying more attention to who they're actually buying from. And
Exactly. Mm. Now, if it wouldn't be, as I say, money is just a mean, money is just a channel to provide welfare and happiness and all these things. So, but by means of this financing, these farmers can see their own name branded on the coffee that is being sold. And people is asking for the coffee of this female producer, for example, because they want to support her directly in a way. You know, it's like, it's a very beautiful connection, because for the farmers, it's very rewarding to see their names on their own coffee, when it would usually end up mixed with commercial and not high grade coffee, because they were not able to break the limitations of not having an accessible supply chain. They were excluded from it. And now that they have this opportunity, you can see the pride in their faces when they see their own names, the names of their communities printed on the backs of the coffee, but also for the roaster who travel all the way to Mexico, all the way to the tiny communities, and even part of our team, they said, I thought coffee was produced as wine, you know, that you just walk between the rows of the plants. And when they saw the very hard conditions, the very hard geographical conditions where coffee is grown, they appreciate very much the cup, and they bring big effort to bring this coffee to your table. So I think it's creating awareness of all the importance of the whole supply chain.
Thank you. That's very interesting to. So it sounds like when you're saying that people, you know, once they hear about this particular grower, there's this kind of innate desire to have a direct relationship, you know, with somebody who has a face rather than with like an anonymous commodity. So that even just giving this face already, yeah, enables people to deepen their trading relationships. So thank you. Very interesting. Pranav, I saw somebody else wanted to speak, but I'm relying on you to.
Totally. So I have to be that little police here. There was a problem. That's why I didn't invite that person. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
Yeah.
Good. Okay. I guess why that's kind of an eye opener is because so far from our side in region, we've been really looking at the ecological, you know, technology side of things and imagining that, you know, nobody's going to be just interested in, you know, an average smallholder coffee farmer. They will want to know exactly like how did you improve your soil and how did you improve your biodiversity. But actually, when I'm listening to your experience with Ethic Hub, is that doesn't need to be the case. You know, we don't need to be so specific about exactly describing into great minute detail what did you do on your plot. Just the fact that, you know, an anonymous producer has gotten a face might already attract this kind of solidarity that is waiting kind of under the surface. And what I hear what you're doing is that you're starting with that and then, you know, adding more and more layers of information later on. Is that am I understanding this correctly?
Basically, it's like I was saying at the beginning, an holistic approach, which is required when working with these smallholder farmers, because it's so expensive to arrive to 1 hectare of land far from everywhere. So you have to find ways of working with them in a sustainable way. And that means that it cannot be just measuring impact, or just cannot be helping them trade their coffee, or it just not be, only being loans. But our vision is that an holistic approach is required to solve, to really reach them and solve their problems.
Yeah. No, it resonates. Actually, I remember even, you know, in India at one point we thought, why do all smallholders have to connect to like markets in big cities? You know, can we not also have smallholder produce reach other smallholder like consumer households? And then when we tried doing this actually in Tamil Nadu, in the state where I live, we realized that to bring one product or one service to a smallholder household somewhere in a remote area, it doesn't work if you're only shipping one good or service. You know, it's because the channel is so expensive, you need to have at least 4 or 5 reasons, you know, to go to that remote area and have maintained that relationship with that household. So what you're saying sounds very similar, that it makes sense to maintain a relationship with a remote actor if you have multiple reasons to go there. One could be finance, one could be like eco credits, something else could be the quality coffee. Something else could be, I've been hearing things, for example, about micro insurance, whether it is weather insurance or other forms of insurance, that you can have these multiple layers of reasons to go so remote. So even if the tech would enable us, because on the blockchain, an acre is not different than a hectare or 5 hectares or 20 hectares. But actually the limiting factor becomes like how many relationships can you meaningfully manage? And so I'm taking that from this conversation. Go for it.
And I think it's the technology is an enabler, no? So for example, for these eco credits, technology is required because you cannot do like the traditional verification system, no? That requires, 60,000 hectares, pilot projects with a huge investment and a huge bureaucracy, etc. The only way we can solve that for them is to leverage on technology so we can measure decentralized way with decentralized auditors, theory of games, circles of confidence, crypto incentives, and so on.
Yeah, very, very interesting. Maybe another question that that is alive for us when we're designing these incentives, and also what Gabriela was saying, that money is one flavor and a whole bouquet of different aspects of these relationships. What has been your experience in financial and non-financial rewards, for example? There's one case in India that we're working on right now, and what they're saying is that actually if we create too many financial incentives for land stewards, then there's a risk that people start, adopting practices just because of the money. And then there's a risk that we're losing out on other motivations, maybe just intrinsic motivation that I want to be a good land steward or I want to be a good community member. Can you speak to that about, the like financial incentives crowding out other forms of motivation?
Well, in the case of the farmers at the base of the pyramid, I would like to reflect on Maslow's pyramid. First, you need to cover such very basic needs that are not met yet now to the people that is unbanked and excluded from all the systems. Because let's think that most of these farmers live in tiny houses with tin roof and dirt floors. And they don't have the ability to save, not even to cover for very basic needs as getting sick. So it's very difficult to ask them for have higher aspirations than solving these very pressing ones. So after we build that layers of security, that they can plan for the future, that they can think they will have something to count on for tomorrow and for the next harvest, then we can start building on that. And what we're doing is not starting from zero, because they are starting to feel proud of the practices they have been carrying along all this time. So I think the economical incentives are very strong in this stage, especially for them. But once we satisfy these very basic needs, once these are met, then we can start building on top of that. And that we've seen with the farmers that are already into the program, and they know they can place their coffee at a good price and they will get this benefit. So they are starting to think on participating on the programs to improve the quality, and we are starting to create this awareness of the importance of the methods of agriculture. So I think it's very important, but please let's keep the focus that our reality in first world is far away from the reality of these tiny farmers. And it's not fair to ask them to think on sustainability, to ask them to think of better practices when they are able, barely able to put food in their tables. So of course they are interested into improving, but just let's keep in the scope the situation, the daily, the basis, the basic problems they face every day. Okay. And yes, I'm very happy to see that they are very proud to be part of a community, to be aware that they belong to a global community that cares for them, that is willing to pay this price for their coffee as a way of helping them, not just from enjoying the amazing coffee they produce, but also as a way of connecting and human beings. And I think this has a reward because they feel they are connected to a community and they will be more willing to give back to that community in terms of better practices and all that we long for.
Yeah. No, it was definitely not coming from a first world experience. It was coming from a direct experience of working at the grassroots with different types of incentives. When we're talking about smallholder, for example, organic movements, even amongst those movements, there are big differences. Some really see organic as a kind of an access to income, and others see it as a kind of an ethical consideration. In India, for example, we've got a whole movement of Gandhian farmers who actually get offended if you start talking about premiums for organic products. They're like, whoa, wait a minute. You're like, we're talking about our pride of actually being a steward that cares for the soil. And then, you're kind of polluting that sacred relationship with money that doesn't belong there. So it's, I think there are different ways of looking at non-financial incentives. And another very important aspect is also, like, if you look at a household, who actually gets to decide where the money goes? Here in India, often if you look at, say, marketing, it's often a male role. So the man comes home from the market with more money, doesn't necessarily mean that the money goes into welfare for the family. Whereas if you would structure the role reward in a different way, then perhaps, for example, giving women a say on whatever is a need. It could be an in-kind need. For example, you're talking about organic inputs or seeds or things like that. That could also be a different design.
I would love to point out something regarding the female agricultures, because when we visit the communities, we told them to remember to invite women to the groups, to the working groups, and as a way to promote the women participation, being invited by the men who are usually leading the groups, we told them that buyers like better the groups where the women included, because it means the men were nicer somehow, and they laugh about this and they like it, and somehow they keep an eye on this and they are more inclusive, and they try to include more women into the groups because of these incentives. That is not necessarily economical, no, but it's also like being liked by the others because you are doing the right thing, and it's a good thing to do it. So
yeah, exactly. Super. Wow, thank you so much. I don't know how strict we want to be with time, but I'm seeing that it's we've hit 1 hour.
Absolutely. And I would just like to take this opportunity to thank everybody for giving us this time. And I think personally, it's been a very, very interesting conversation in terms of hearing from Gabriella and, Jory and Tiago as well, and finding so many similarities, but also finding these nuances to the conversation, I think adds so much more value. I would welcome you to continue this conversation in the channels that Region provides, whether they be the Discord or very shortly, if you follow the Twitter handle, we'll be putting out a form where you can sign up to continue to be part of such conversations, as we intend to hold more of these to develop a much more strong ongoing conversation with the people here, as well as people who are interested in furthering the space. I thank you once again. I thank you, Ice, Josh,
Yo,
Thiago,
thank
Jory,
you.
And Gabriel.
Thanks for now.
Absolutely.
Thanks, everyone. Looking forward
thank
to take
you.
This forward.
Thank you
thank
very
you.
Much.
Thank you, everyone, for the space. Thank you.
Take care.
Thank you.
Ciao, ciao.
Thanks for checking out another episode of The Ether. That was Value Chains to Unlock the Potential of ReFi, hosted by the ReGen Foundation, recorded on Thursday, June 9th, 2022. For TerraSpaces.org, I'm Finn. Thanks for listening. And if you want to keep listening, head on over to TerraSpaces.org/donate and share some here.
Sipping on a little bit of sin I've been giving. Try to keep it written down so it feels like I've been living. I've been realizing a minute reality ain't got limits. Going out my fucking mind, testing out the physics, stretching out the distance. For instance, let me be specific. The risk is hedge funding the business, betting on the difference, ingesting all the research, sleeping through the rebirth, sliding out feet first. Sleep tight, little dreamer. Early to bed, early to rise with a rugged ass demeanor. Taking beats to the cleaners. You know I love my t-shirts and the people who support my little dream here. Transparent cows, I gotta steer clear. 2020 going down is one fucking weird year. Take a second look around, the psyops is winning. Set the table, we just biopsy dinner.
Now I'm gonna react to that and act like I'm telling you a personal anecdote. Something to break the tension, something to endear myself a little bit, something kind of embarrassing. And you guys are gonna make an awe sound. It's true. It really happened.
They got a tracker in the phone, tracking everywhere we go. And it's fine if I don't know. I already sold my soul. Getting ready, rock and roll. Tip the first domino. Feeling abominable with these avalanche flows. Stop and rest on the road. Gotta get where I'm going. And the rest of y'all know that we hit the ground sore. And I'll be coming for the fuckers that be summoning the trouble. Running on the double while I'm handing out the W's. Putting wins on the board every fucking day. They love me on the team because I know my fucking place. Better get in where you fit in. I'm delivering the meaning. I inherited the demons, always sneaky, never seen them. If I'm breathing, I'm reading, I'm not even being conceited. I need to see for myself if you think that I'm believing. It's the season of reason, y'all be seizing the research. I'm receiving the meaning, that shit's called teamwork.
It's not so much as so little has to do with what everything is. But it is within our self-interest to understand the topography of our lives unto ourselves. The future states that there is no time other than the collapsation of that sensation of the mirror of the memories in which we are living. Common knowledge, but important nonetheless.
Imagine a world in which an old dying man's last dying wish is fulfilled.
Alexa? Can you play that one CFI space where he clowned all the SafeMoon and XRP bag holders and then told everyone to buy Luna because it was going to 1,000?
I'm confused why we're not talking about the fact that you can easily, like, 300x your money on XRP. Like,
you know,
I
son,
at the TikTok,
I remember a time.
And it's
Alexa,
guaranteed, obviously.
Enough. I'm trying to reminisce now. I remember a time before Terra Spaces existed, when things that were said on random Twitter spaces would just get lost to the proverbial black hole of time. Time, time.
That's the best bet.
Why isn't Luna in wind turbines?
Hey, guys.
Though? I'm reading all about these wind
guys,
turbines.
Guys, do you mind if I explain Cardano a little bit? Because I've been in Cardano since like 2018 and I can give you a full breakdown.
Just when you thought it was safe to shill shitcoins.
Oh my god, you guys, I don't know what to do. So much blood. It's so red.
From the creators of Your Exit Liquidity, in association with We All Love to Hear Ourselves Talk, Inc. For more information, go to terraspaces.org/donate. Spaces.